President Biden announced yesterday that the U.S. would ban all imports of Russian oil and gas effective immediately.
We're banning all imports of Russian oil and gas and energy. That means Russian oil will no longer be acceptable at U.S. ports, and the American people will deal another powerful blow to Putin's war machine.
The European Union also pledged to cut Europe's consumption of Russian energy by two-thirds by the end of this year. That's a tall order, though, because Europe uses a lot of fuel from Russia, with some countries getting as much as 80% of their energy needs met by Russian fuel. The U.S. is not as dependent on Russian oil and gas, but Americans will see gas prices continue to rise as a result of the ban. We're talking about American and European sanctions on the third largest producer of oil in the world, and we want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. Do you support this ban on Russian oil and gas imports? Are you okay with paying more at the gas pump if it means not relying on Russian energy? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas@WPR.org. Jonathan Elkind is a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. From 2009 to 2017, he worked on international energy and climate issues at the U.S. Department of Energy. He was also U.S. Assistant Secretary for International Affairs from 2015 to 17. John, thanks for joining us today.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Up till yesterday, the Biden administration said they were not looking at banning Russian energy imports, in part because of the fear of the impact on American consumers. Why this change in strategy?
Well, I think that the Biden administration, as the rest of us, have been watching with utter horror the development of Russia's attack on a peaceful neighbor, namely Ukraine. And so I think that the sentiment in the White House and in lots of European capitals as well has been that additional measures were needed to make very plain that this is not a time for business as usual with Russia.
Now, the gas we fill our tank with, odds are it didn't come from Russia. We're not their biggest customer. About how much Russian oil ends up here in the U.S. economy?
So the share of U.S. Crude oil and refined products, that's the geeky term for gasoline, diesel, et cetera, that comes from Russia is about 7-8%. It varies. That was the number throughout 2021. Interestingly, since the start of the year, U.S. refiners and distributors have basically dropped those numbers to somewhere pretty close to zero, even in advance of the White House sanctions that were instituted about a week and a half ago. Purchasers of crude oil and refined product in the United States had real concerns about the possibility of sanctions and about the possibility being caught on the wrong side. So since the sanctions have been instituted, even more so, there's been this kind of over-compliance, people doing more than was required of them. Now, of course, we have the ban that President Biden instituted yesterday that will phase in the coming weeks. So the numbers, I think, will stay low and go firmly to zero.
Flipping things around, how important are oil exports to the Russian economy?
Russia is, in simple terms, an energy economy from beginning to end. Oil and gas in particular play a really outsized role in the total GDP of Russia in terms of export earnings. It changes from one year to the next, but often oil and gas represent half of Russia's export earnings. So this is big money. The stakes are very high. And the impacts consequently can be very high, not so much from the U.S. because our purchases historically were never huge, but if that action is mirrored by others, Russia will not be in a happy place. And already in the last week or so, one has seen repeated indications that Russia is simply having a great deal of difficulty selling its crude. Russia exports just a little bit more than 4.5 million barrels per day onto global markets of crude oil. Something like 3 million barrels a day of Russian crude and refined product has not been finding buyers. So massive discounts have been instituted already. People are picking up cargoes of the Russian, those who are willing to buy are picking up cargoes of Russian crude oil at $20, $25 discount by comparison to the Brent marker crude, the one of the commonly cited grades of crude oil.
We're talking to Jonathan Elkind from the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University, looking at the U.S. ban on accepting imports of Russian oil. You can join in at 800-642-1234 with your questions, your reactions. Let's go to your calls now. Ian is with us in Madison. Ian, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Love the program. Listen to it as often as I can. I just wanted to comment. I drive a diesel truck. My wife has a V8 family Suburban. We're definitely feeling the price of gas going up, but I think that it's worth noting that if this is the price to pay for supporting independence and freedom, that in the long run, it's a very small price to pay, and I think that Americans can shoulder the burden of the price increases over the short term or long term if necessary to put enough of the hurt on Putin.
Ian, thanks for the call. That's the case President Biden has been making, I think, John, that Americans will feel this, but it's a price worth paying to stop, to at least hinder Putin's invasion of Ukraine. What do you think of what you heard there from Ian?
Well, I think it's a very important perspective. Look, there are lots of people who have had concerns or question marks about Russian policy through the years, but now we are confronted with what most people thought was unthinkable. So yeah, the world changed. The world looks a whole lot different than it did just 2 weeks ago. And I think that there are a lot of people in this country and around the globe who are saying we really have to think very differently about what's okay to do and what's not.
Thanks for that call. Looking at the bigger picture, this is raising, again, concerns about the extent to which the U.S. depends on oil imports from anywhere in the world. A couple different solutions people have made the case for, John. One is produce more oil here in the United States, refine more oil into gasoline here in the United States. How big a part of the piece of the part of the puzzle is that?
Well, the oil markets globally function as a single market, essentially. So you pay a little bit more or a little bit less for a higher or lower grade of crude oil, one that is higher in sulfur, tends to be less expensive, one that is more liquid, less viscous, less waxy. You tend to pay a little bit more for. But for all intents and purposes, it's a single global market. And as long as we remain part of that market, there will be limited impact at the pump that comes from whether the gasoline that you're burning in your car is gasoline made from Mexican crude oil or U.S. crude oil or anybody else's. There are, however, political and economic elements of power that Ian, the last caller, was just talking about. That's a different set of facts. It's a different issue. Really, the only way to reduce our vulnerability to the whims of the global oil market is for us to use less oil. That means greater energy efficiency. That means alternative systems, for example, electric vehicles in place of internal combustion engines. But that takes longer to play out. That takes longer to see happen in the marketplace.
I wanted to ask you about that next. It seems as though some European countries are saying, hey, this is a wake-up call to do this in as short a run as possible and stop having to depend on Russian fuel. Do you think this change in the last couple of weeks will kickstart trying to get off of oil dependency?
Well, it's interesting. Yesterday, the European Union announced a proposed new energy strategy that will be debated by heads of state in Paris tomorrow and Friday. That new strategy talks about reducing by two-thirds Europe's purchase of oil and gas from Russia by the end of this year, and reducing as much in advance of 2030, reducing it to zero by as much in advance of 2030 as is possible. So that's some very ambitious steps that they are contemplating. And there will be real impacts in terms of consumer prices across Europe. Now, in this country, we have typically not had a lot of love for any energy policies whatsoever that resulted in big consumer impacts. And so in a way, we've made ourselves persistently vulnerable to some of the energy security and economic hits that go along with that.
We're talking to John Alkine, senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University. He worked at the Energy Department for nearly a decade. He's talking to us about energy resources, how they factor into the war in Ukraine. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you see this as a reason to accelerate development of renewable energy sources? Do you want to see more oil and natural gas production here in the U.S.? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up here on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Verrett. We're picking up our talk with Columbia University researcher, former Energy Department official John Alkine about American and European efforts to cut back on reliance on Russian energy after the invasion of Ukraine. Let's go back to your calls now at 800-642-1234. Jeff is with us in Barry Mills. Jeff, hi.
Good morning or good afternoon. I was concerned about the misinformation that spewed over the media about the Keystone pipeline. I understand that that's oil from the tar sands and it's shipped, you know, going to be piped down to Texas to be refined or just sold as is to countries like China or whoever, you know, being dirty oil with, you know. And I also heard that there are other production leases that are already established in Alaska and elsewhere on federal lands, and that they still can, you know, drill anytime they want to. And I think it's just the oil companies pulling the wool over everybody's eyes.
Jeff, you know, thanks a lot for the call. Jeff referring to a couple of criticisms of the Biden administration from Republicans, one for blocking the Keystone XL pipeline, also saying that the U.S., that the administration was getting in the way of oil development. Your thoughts, John?
Well, I think it's a pretty hard case to make if one wants to assert that the Biden administration is providing obstacles to the oil and gas industry. The United States is the largest producer of oil in the world, and our production is anticipated to grow in the course of this year alone by somewhere between 700,000 barrels a day and 1.2 million barrels a day, depending on whose outlook you rely upon. So already big, getting even bigger. When we talk to oil company executives, what we hear time and time again is that the limiting factor for their growth of U.S. production has been Wall Street. Wall Street went through a period from the mid-2000s to about the present day, and particularly in the last 5 years, where Wall Street was fed up with seeing returns on investment that were, in the view of those investors, too modest. So Wall Street has leaned really hard on the U.S. oil and gas industry to exercise financial discipline and to return profits to investors. So, you know, you can point to a number of different things that the Biden administration has done that are focused on making sure that we understand properly the climate change impacts that are associated with all parts of our energy economy. But in terms of this notion that the Biden administration is obstructing the growth of the oil and gas industry, that dog won't hunt.
Thanks for that call. We'll go next to Nancy in Minocqua. Nancy, hi.
Hi.
What did you want to ask about, Nancy?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say this is a really great show, and I wanted to give you kudos for that. Second of all, the gentleman that just asked the same question, you know, you hear so much right now, you know, depending upon what channels you listen to and what news sources, and one's bashing it and saying it's the president's job to make the oil prices, and another one's saying, you know, that's totally ridiculous. And I think there's a lot of people in this country that don't understand really who makes the gas prices, and they really don't even understand exactly how much total oil we get shipped into our country. I had done some investigation, and I think it's like 37%, and out of that, Canada gets most of our money. You know, they get the most percentage of what is shipped in. So I'd like that kind of cleared up for people, and you did a good job with the last guy, but maybe you could go a little farther.
Nancy, thanks for the call. First of all, what goes into setting the price of oil and the price we pay at the pump, John? It's not something that a president has a dial and sets the price.
No, the president has very limited ability to, especially in the short run, to change or influence what consumers are paying at the pump. Basically, it's the laws of supply and demand, like how much you see overall economic growth in this country or and around the globe, all of it in aggregate, and how much demand responds to that. Now, there's also an element of the price that reflects expectations tomorrow and the next day and then out into the future. And this is why you have a curve of future prices for oil. And often you see in a time like today that with pretty elevated prices, today Brent crude went down actually to $111 per barrel. Very good news in my view, because it's been pretty high lately. But you know, even at $111 a barrel for Brent, that's a pretty elevated price. If you look out several months into the future, the market expects that will get a little bit easier for consumers. But that expectation about where demand and supply are going to be forms a very significant piece of what ultimately gets passed through to you when you're filling your car at the pump.
Thanks for that call. We are talking to John Alkine from Columbia University, looking at oil and gas prices and the ban on U.S. imports of Russian fuel. Back to your calls at 800-642-1234. Tom is with us now in Wild Rose. Hi, Tom.
Hi. My question is, your guest mentioned that the refineries had cut off the Russian oil, and I had heard that before on the news. You know, is that 2 days before the Biden administration, or a month? Are there 40 ships full of oil sitting offshore, or were they sent back, or do we have them stored? I just wondered a little bit more about that story.
Tom, thanks for the call. If oil was on its way from Russia when refineries stopped taking it, when the ban kicked in, what happens to it?
I got to separate my answer to two pieces. Tom, in part, was asking about the so-called overcompliance that one has seen that was already happening before the White House made the announcement yesterday, before the president made the announcement yesterday to ban further purchases. And that was a case where uncertainty in the market and some degree of distaste over what economic actors are seeing in terms of the brutality in Ukraine resulted in people saying, you know what, I'm just not going to go there right now. And this was a pretty big impact. You had banks that were unwilling to issue letters of credit for purchase of Russian crude oil. You had tanker operators that didn't want their tankers to go up into the Black Sea to some of the Russian ports because that was considered to be a war zone. You had ports in the West, including in the United States, that didn't want the Russian tankers coming in. There was one case in Scotland that I saw reporting on a day or so ago where the port workers said flatly, we're not unloading that tanker, forget it. So a whole bunch of different things coming into play at once. Now, in terms of the announcement that President Biden made yesterday, there are some provisions that allow the winding down of existing contracts over a period of 45 days. This is intended to try to reduce the harmful impact on American households and American motorists. I think that's an appropriate thing to do. We'll see just how much the market reacts to this decision in the days ahead.
In just our last minute or so, what are you watching for on this story, the Russian oil and gas, in the days ahead?
Well, one thing I'm watching is whether there is any kind of a political off-ramp. Mr. Putin has gotten himself and his countrymen into a absolutely terrible situation, barbarically attacking a peaceful neighbor. The answer to that question will have a huge impact on what happens next in energy markets around the globe. But fundamentally, we kind of come back to first principles, which is, before anything else, this is a humanitarian crisis. We have the luxury in the United States of looking at it from afar at a time when people in Ukraine are having their lives and their livelihoods either ended or upended. We need to remember that that's the real tragedy and the real impact of this story.
John, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
It's my pleasure.
Jonathan Elkind is a senior research scholar at the Center on Global Energy Policy at Columbia University, formerly with the U.S. Department of Energy and U.S. Assistant Secretary for International Affairs from 2015 to 2017. He joined us for a look at the U.S. ban on Russian energy imports.